Hi, I'm here with Carl Jackson, an old friend and collaborator who I met through KM4Dev, Knowledge Management for Development, which is one of my home, mostly online communities. And I asked Carl to join me to talk a little bit about some of the experiences of both strategically thinking about and participating in online communities in the realm of sustainable development or international development with attention towards sustainable development. So, Carl, thanks for spending some time and tell me about what you're doing now first, okay?
Yeah, well, it's great to be chatting, Nancy. So, yes, since leaving IDS just over a year ago, I'm now working as an independent consultant through my firm, West Hill Knowledge Group. So, primarily involved in working with some of the larger international development organizations, UN bilaterals, around issues of learning and change and looking at knowledge as one of the kind of interesting entry points for bringing about learning and change within international development.
So before we dig into the case that I was interested in, are you seeing these international development organizations using online communities and networks more or less, or what are you seeing right now?
Yeah, I think they're actually using them a lot more. I think because the experience of the staff in the bank and in other organizations is now much more sort of native experience with especially social media. There's not really a hard sell anymore. So lots of staff are now familiar with it in their own private lives. And so I think there's very much more fertile ground now for using online collaboration to support learning and knowledge sharing.
And what are some of the successes you're seeing?
I think some of the most interesting things are where it's now possible to quite cheaply create quite broad-based and surprising networks of activists. Within Africa, a continental scale, I'm associated with a project called Africa Adapt, which is bringing together participatory researchers, policymakers, and community advocates around climate adaptation. And within just over a kind of a year and a half, that's really managed to create a sense of community and now is organizing some quite impressive face-to-face events at a continental level. And I think a few years ago, that kind of thing would have been much, much harder to get off the ground, would have taken a lot more convincing for people to buy into it. Whereas now I think people are, prepared to give it either an enthusiastic welcome or certainly the benefit of the doubt.
So you're finding that people are being able to find time to participate and engage in things like Africa Adapt.
Yes. I mean, it's still important for, I don't think that the role of specialist conveners and facilitators of these spaces, and especially in the development sector, for public kind of grant financing to be behind it. But I don't think it seems as though now people are seeing it as a kind of a core instrument of how we now work in a much more networked way.
Are these, for example, is Africa Adapt an open community or a closed community?
Africa Adapt is an open community. I mean, it has elements of kind of sign up and expectations about levels of participation. But no, it's not a gated space. It's a very much an open space. But with a very subject specific focus, so it tends to attract particular kinds of people.
And is it attracting the kinds of people they hope to attract?
On the whole, I think that the one group where I think there's probably been harder to get awareness and buy-in has been within the climate science community. But I think that's partly because within the kind of the social side of international development, I think there's quite a strong divide between that and the natural sciences, as there is in many other disciplines, and people mm-hmm. already have quite different networks and ways of sharing knowledge. So I think it's not so much that the online collaboration is creating a barrier, it's that from a disciplinary background, natural scientists and social scientists have very different ways of interacting and different standards for interaction. Mm-hmm. So there's quite a lot of learning to be done around how you bridge those communities.
That sounds very familiar to me in my experience as well. How about policy? Are any of the communities you're involved with involve policymakers or government officials?
Certainly. Africa Adapt does have policymakers involved, and another community which I've just been facilitating a little bit, which is the within elders communities. We recently had a debate between experts on issues of food security and gender, which was convened by Bridge, which is a gender and development program at IDS, and that brought together both researchers and policymakers from a range of organizations for quite a detailed discussion over 2 days, and it was very successful.
Okay, so you hit on something that I've noticed is it was a detailed discussion over 2 days. So the focus was super clear and the time range was short.
Yes. And I think one of the other kind of key things was that there was quite substantial kind of bilateral engagement with potential participants in probably 3 to 4 weeks leading up to the date, so that there was a lot of work went into brainstorming around themes that we could focus on in the discussion, and also in gathering brief biographies of the participants. And we did it that way because we noticed, certainly in a number of other discussions of this type, that a lot of the initial energy within the discussion in the first maybe day would get soaked up in people introducing themselves and getting kind of comfortable and kind of chewing around some of the wider issues. And so by kind of putting in the effort into doing that and facilitating and synthesizing that in the weeks preceding, the energy when people came together in the community was much more focused. And so we got a lot more done.
So there's a real respect for people's time here.
Mm, absolutely. I think the kind of people that we want to engage with are often, you know, they're kind of diarized and scheduled to death almost. So you've really got to make the process as smooth as possible, and to indicate a kind of, you know, that it's something which is being taken seriously and there's going to be some valuable outputs from it.
When we contrast something like that event, do you see the strategy of ongoing conversations in more open places to be fruitful for certain types of people, or less important perhaps than they were before?
I think open conversations with a less clear focus are still important. I mean, I think that people want sometimes to participate online for different reasons, and sometimes people are looking for more kind of increasing their awareness of the landscape that they're maybe walking into, a new landscape. So they want to know who the actors are, they want to know what some of the events are and what some of the kind of values and languages, and for that kind of orientation, open discussions are still really valuable because they allow you to discover things. Whereas if you go into a very focused, time-limited discussion, you're not probably going to discover a great deal of new stuff that you're not expecting. You're going to be able to drill down, but you're not going to kind of broaden out that easily.
That's a nice way of describing it. It really resonates. I also noticed you use the word orientation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things that I've been exploring with a number of groups is that idea of thinking about how different tools, different approaches satisfy different needs. Orientations of a community. So that was good to hear the language. I had originally called to ask you about some of the eldest communities, and I became quite intrigued by the Africa Adapt. I'd be curious to see, you have been involved in strategic conversations about the eldest communities. You've helped them as they got established when you were at IDS, and now you're a member of them.
Mm-hmm.
What do you see as the primary value of IDS's approach with the eldest communities?
I think one of the most important things that the IDS has been able to do, I think, is to be in there for the long haul. I think when eldest communities were set up, I mean, there were probably some other spaces like that, but the level of kind of demand for the eldest communities and the level of initial kind of participation and membership was quite low. And I think that if it had been subject to more kind of stringent kind of, you know, short-term performance requirements, it's the kind of thing that commercially I think would have bombed fairly quickly. But I think that because the grant makers that work with IDS have a longer strategic vision about the value of collaboration and bringing in more diverse and little heard voices into debates around development, that long-term commitment was there. So IDS has provided a good kind of seedbed for a number of initiatives, of which Elders Communities is one of those. So I think that's definitely one of them. And then I think one of the other things that IDS has been able to do is, because it has, you know, an established reputation as both a research and training institute in its own right, beyond the kind of online work that it does, I think that gives a certain level of brand recognition, which helps to bring people towards Elders Communities. And because of the associated knowledge resources that are available on the broader Elders portal, a level of quality and backup that can be hooked into online discussions within the community spaces. So it's very easy to build supporting resources into community spaces on Elders by drawing on the resource guides that are developed at IDS.
This brings up a particular issue of who's doing this work, who's backing up, who's drawing on. How do those communities get supported, and what kind of time does it require?
I think there are a range of different types of spaces that are set up on Elders Community. The largest number of them are set up independently by ordinary members of the community who want to maybe have a blog space for themselves, or it's for a kind of, you know, a time limited event they want to have, to be able to put some documentation up for participants, or to share videos, or just generally kind of look for opportunities. So a lot of people are doing stuff in a very unsupported way, apart from the fact that the team at IDS is providing ongoing, you know, support for the technical platform, and also provides troubleshooting advice for people in terms of how they set up their profiles and how they add different functionalities into their, you know, their you know, their own personal spaces they might want to create. But then there are, I suppose, a smaller proportion of the spaces are created much more intentionally and with a lot more of input. And so the food security and gender experts discussion, which I mentioned earlier, which was convened by Bridge Program at IDS, was part of a wider programmatic effort around that subject, and had a very specific objective of gathering knowledge which could feed into a larger publication which comes out of their program. So that particular space that was set up on Elders had probably three people working on the preparation for that two-day event, probably with a lead time of about 2 months, and probably in terms of, I would imagine, total time of individuals that went into the preparation and the facilitation and some of the follow-up activities, I would estimate maybe there were 30 person days went into it, so quite considerable. Mm-hmm. But the value that's come out of that in terms of being able to convene over 30 experts internationally with, you know, kind of with themselves considerable profiles in this area, to have a very detailed and, you know, quite cutting edge discussion, I think, you know, if you'd have looked at how else you could have done that, the costs of convening that kind of a group, both logistically and, you know, just the success of being able to do that in a physical space, I think you'd be looking at, you know, orders of magnitude of cost, you know, 5-10 times more than doing it in an online collaboration space.
Makes sense. When you think you talk about facilitation, and I know this is something that you're really good at. Okay. What are the really key lessons for you that have come out of facilitating these types of communities as a practitioner?
I think it's very much to, in thinking of each, especially when it's a new group coming together, it's really important to try to think your way into where they're coming from. So trying to imagine the scenarios that maybe they're going to be considering participating, and then their actual participation. And I think, you know, that's a way of designing a process which leads up to an online collaboration, which, as I say, is as kind of has as little friction for the participants as possible in terms of the logistics, and also tries to anticipate some of the interests and needs that they may have. So if they're, you know, if they're primarily policymakers, then they're probably going to want to have something which has got, you know, the output's going to have to be quite kind of tractable in terms of feedback into policy processes within their organizations. If they're researchers, they're going to want to be able to highlight, you know, their current most recent research, or to gather ideas for new researchable new researchable topics. So it's putting yourself in the shoes of the participants and trying to construct a process which is useful for them, not just useful for the people who've maybe commissioned the discussion to take place. So there's a balancing there that one has to do as a facilitator. And then I think the second thing is that, and I think this has changed over the last few years, is that, as I say, now that people are much more comfortable with participating in online spaces, I think the facilitation needs to be when it's live, needs to be a much more light touch. I don't think people really need that much kind of hand holding anymore. And so the facilitator really shouldn't be trying to be acting as a chair of a discussion. I think online collaboration, I don't think a chairing role is either kind of necessary or particularly helpful. So I think it's much more about kind of holding the space and maybe kind of, you know, doing some kind of back channel matchmaking or kind of looking for people who may be a bit quiet and kind of, you know, that kind of pastoral care behind the scenes is important, but less kind of like front and center. And I think, you know, because I think then the energy that the participants are bringing to the discussion, if there is energy, then doesn't get kind of blocked. I don't think you can lead discussions online. You can kind of nudge them, but you can't kind of, you know, suddenly say, oh, why don't we go over here and talk about this? That has to come from within the group.
That's great advice. Any other advice you'd leave someone who is, let's say, taking their community to the next step?
I think it's important to, if when the community does come together in a good way, has a powerful discussion, I think it's really important to translate that as quickly as possible into something tangible. I think often I've seen online discussions where there have been kind of good intentions to do something with the outputs, and maybe they have done, but it's, you know, it's kind of the wheels have ground very slowly, and they've had the intention of coming up with a nice kind of polished product, and it comes out in 3 months' time. I think if you want to take your community to the next level, you've got to be prepared to very quickly synthesize and publish some kind of product. And I think, you know, rough and quick is better than kind of polished and slow, in terms of giving an asset back to the community and to the community members that they can then find some extra value on and use in their own, you know, their own day-to-day activities. And I think often we don't kind of build in the time to do that.
I can think of myself of two workshops last week where ideally those things would be done, and they're not quite done, but designing processes where some of this stuff is self-documenting and is helping. I think we're getting closer to that. But, well, Carl, thank you so much. I learned a ton, and you've helped me also crystallize and put words to some things that I sense but often don't articulate quite so clearly. So thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
No trouble, Nancy. It's been a blast as ever.